truckers are interested in is how fast their trucks will go and how far their CBs will reach.
Well, hello, my friends. Thank you for joining me here and getting the chance to meet the Dirty Dog. This chance is going to be primarily about discussing everything and anything associated with the trucking industry, including the latest news and events, with plenty of how-tos and insight into what it takes to be a safe and successful driver. Talk a little bit about dispatching as well as brokering, but I'd like to impart some of what I've learned along the way. Maybe help some of you young guys out. First of all, I want to give out a huge Semper Fi to all my Marine Corps brothers out there, and a big 10-4 to all my trucking brothers out there as well, trying to run up and down America's highways, trying to eke out a living in these wild and crazy times we find ourselves in. A little bit about myself. Right out of high school, I joined the United States Marine Corps, did boot camp down in Parris Island, did a six-year commitment, 4 years active, 2 years in reserves. The 4 years active, I spent traveling around the world 2.5 times. I went in to the Marine Corps wanting to travel around the world. I want to get out and see things. I was raised in a bit of a small town, about 45 miles southeast of 45, 50 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, and had never really left, you know, the area. So I wanted to go out and see the world, you know. So I went and joined the Marine Corps. Primarily did so because my dad was in the Army, and I got upset with my dad one day when I was in like 8th or 9th grade, went stomping up the stairs and said, I can't wait to get out of this house. I'm going to join the Marine Corps when I get out. I just did that to piss my dad off, you know, because he was in the Army and I thought the Marine Corps was better. And truth be told, I idolized my dad. I'm not going to say sneak, but, you know, him and my mom, you know, he was at work. My mom was out doing clothes or shopping or wherever the hell. And I'd slide into their bedroom and check their closet out. And he had all his old Army uniforms hanging in there with all his medals and all that stuff. And I idolized my dad. But at that point in time, once again, when I was 8th or 9th grade, stomping up the stairs, pissed off at him over something stupid, I'm sure, as teenagers do. I'm going to join the Marine Corps. Well, from that point on, every time I got in an argument with him, I brought that up. I can't wait to get out of this house. I'm going to go join the Marine Corps. Well, my mom is a bit of an agitator. Such am I. That's where the handle Dirty Dog comes from, because I'm an agitator from way back. But my mom started teasing me. Once I became a senior in high school, you know, little digs here and there. Well, you're pretty close. And at the time, I was considering college, you know, depending on what, trying to figure out where I wanted to go to college and what for. But she kept needling me. Well, it's that time. What are you going to do? You're going to go to Marine Corps. Couldn't back down. So I went to the recruiter and signed up once I turned 18, graduated from high school, and off I went. You know, put my feet on those yellow footprints down at Parris Island. Once again, I did four years active, 2 years in reserves, 4 years of the 4 years, 2.5 of it was traveling around the world. I was in the infantry, a grunt, a ground pounder, and weapons as well, weapons platoon. Got to train field ops with Marines from other countries all around the world. It was a good experience. And along the way, I mean, we do anywhere from 7 to 14 days or, you know, in the field playing cowboys and Indians, you know. And but we always got liberty, time off, in whatever port you happen to be in, whether it was Spain, Italy, Greece, Turkey, Africa, Norway, you know, wherever, all over Europe, you know, got some time off, and that's where it came from. You know, I could tell you some stories. But anyway, I think my life was a lot like the movie Forrest Gump, in the sense that I let fate dictate where I ended up in life, so to speak. You remember that scene toward the beginning or the end of Forrest Gump when he's sitting on a park bench and a little feather is floating by, you know, and it was kind of a synopsis or whatever throughout the movie how fate just carried him on where he wanted to go. And that was me. Like I said, I went to the Marine Corps because of a whim, upset with my dad, and I couldn't back down. You know, ended up traveling around the world, had a ball, and was only really involved in two major things. Thank God that while I was in it wasn't, you know, wartime. You know, I was inactive from June 78 to June of 82, active during that time span. And so I missed all the bad stuff before Vietnam and the bad stuff after, but I was involved in two things. I did three med floats. A med float is when you go all over Europe. The Navy carted us around in their ships, and then, you know, you would land at whatever port of call, or if you were doing a field op, you'd pull up to shore. You'd, depending on what kind of ship you were on, whether it was an LST or an LPH, would dictate how you got to shore to do your training ops with the other Marines from the other countries. You know, if you're on an LPH, like the Guam or the Okinawa or the Iwo Jima, you know, you flew off in helicopters, 46s or 53s, and you would land on shore then, you know, with all your gear and so forth, and hump. Hump is when you hike force marches to get where you're going, and you do your training exercises and so forth. If you're on LST, I was like on the USS Newport. There was a Harlan County, but they were flat bottom boats, and the bow would separate and open up, and you'd be in Amtrak's and float off to the out of the belly of the ship, splash onto the water, then the Amtrak's would swim to shore, and that's how you would, you know, get out and do your training and so forth. But afterwards, we would always get liberty time off, and wherever you were at, that's how I ended up traveling all over Europe and getting been everywhere from all over Italy, you know, Naples, Palermo, Salerno, you name it. I've been all over Spain, Barcelona, Madrid, Malaga, Torremolinos. I actually met Rod Stewart in a discotheque in Torremolinos, Spain. Torremolinos is, if I remember right, about 25 miles south of Malaga, Spain, where we pulled in for a port of call. But I met Rod Stewart in a discotheque. You know, I met Chuck Norris at the Alaskan airport in Anchorage. Like I said, I did three med floats, you know, three times. I went over to Europe and trained and stuff. Did two Carib floats, Caribbean, flat bottom boats. Those are the LSTs I was talking about. And also did what's called a Westpac, West Pacific. That's where you're stationed in Okinawa, Japan for 13 months. And from there, you do various things. And my case, while I was in Okinawa for those 13 months, we went to Korea and manned the DMZ, Demilitarized Zone. Normally, the Army guards the what's called the DMZ, separates North Korea from South Korea. We relieved the Army up there over Christmas and New Year's for a 30-day period. And got some time off up there. Interesting time. And then also, during that time frame in 1980, was when Jimmy Carter was still in office and the Iranian rescue attempt occurred. And we left Okinawa and crossed the Indian Ocean on our way to Iran. And we provided support for the Army's Delta Force, who was newly formed at the time and was tasked with trying to rescue the 51 hostages. As it turns out, of course, it was a failed rescue attempt. And there's two or three stories I've heard, conspiracy theories or whatnot, why the mission was aborted. You know, I'm not going to get into the reasons why or what I've heard, you know, why what happened. But Helos helicopters took off from the LPHs, you know, under the cover of darkness, early morning, you know, came to shore, landed, provided an LZ, landing zone, perimeter around. And then the Delta Force was supposed to go and rescue the hostages, bring them back to the LZ. Well, the helos had just came and all of a sudden got the abort call. You know, it was like chaos. You know, and then one of the choppers was going up to take off. A C-130, that's a cargo plane, was coming across and boom, boom. 8 guys got killed, 3 of which were in the helicopter from New River, North Carolina, which was a base attached to Camp Lejeune, which was my home base. It was right off the Camp Geiger. We used to go over there to their chow hall all the time. But that was the air wing, New River. But anyway, 3 of the 8 that got killed was from New River. They were Marines. And there was, 7 or 8 other people got hurt in that. And that also, but it was a failed rescue attempt, a blemish on in our history book. Bad time. Anyway, after that came back stateside, and it was no sooner back stateside for a month, 2 months, can't recall which, but it wasn't much, a month or two. And we got deployed down to Key West, Florida, for what they called a Cuban Refugee Flotilla. That's where Castro opened up the gates and said, you know, everybody wants to leave, get the hell out, go. And in essence, what he was really doing was opening up his prisons and all the unsavory characters that was in, I'm not saying all the ones that came over in the flotilla, but a vast amount of them were. He opened up his prisons. They put them in shrimp boats, and they loaded these shrimp boats up asshole to belly button. And it's, 90 miles from Cuba to Key West, Florida. And they come across these shrimp boats, and like I said, it was asshole to belly button, packed like sardines. And they were even in the engine compartments. Where every shrimp boat came over, you know, we were body bagging 3, 4, 5 dead bodies that people were crammed in the engine compartments of these shrimp boats. They're sucking in carbon monoxide and killing them. The bodies were actually blue, but we're body bagging them. But anyway, the good thing about the way Key West was handled, the Cuban Refugee Flotilla, was it was fenced in. It was an old naval base down there, fenced it in entirely. And as these characters came over, we pulled them up shrimp boat, they had to be vetted. You know, who are they? I mean, we didn't want to just let them into the general population, like what's going on now with our southern border down in Mexico. But we vetted them. We pulled them off to the side until we knew who they were, could verify who they were. Then once we knew who they weren't an unsavory character. They weren't a murderer, a rapist, somebody who was just out of the Cuban jails for, you know, whatever. We would release them to their family members who came down, you know, from Miami or Fort Lauderdale or whatever to pick them up and take them, you know, and resettle them. After that, I ended up getting out of the Marine Corps. I seriously thought about re-enlisting. I didn't. I did 4 years active, once again, 2 years in reserves. Got out of the Marine Corps. And once again, it was like the Forrest Gump thing, you know, like, life just, fate took over for me. I got out of the Marine Corps. It turned out that a neighbor lived across the street from my parents. His uncle was the city manager of all the movie theaters, the sit-down theaters, the drive-in theaters. Drive-in theaters were still huge back in the 80s. And this is summer of 82, I'm talking about, when I got off active duty. But there were still like 4 drive-in theaters, 2 sit-down theaters, you know, in the area where I lived. So it just so happened he needed an assistant manager. So I interviewed with him. And because he was a former Marine, you know, gave me a leg up. So I took the job, managed movie theaters, for him, you know, with him for a couple of years. Taught me a lot. Had a ball. Matter of fact, met my first wife. Well, she was a cashier there, and did that for a couple of years. Then once again, that little white feather, you know, of fate. You know, one day a headhunter came into the theater and must have observed or said she had, it was a female, said that she had been there a couple times before and observed me in action, my interactions with the employees, the way I directed things, the way I treated, you know, customers and so forth, and asked me if I would be interested in going to Pittsburgh to do an interview for job openings they had down in New Orleans, Louisiana, with Popeyes, famous fried chicken and biscuits. So yeah, sure, I'm interested. So I had to go through two interviews down in Pittsburgh, you know, two different times. And I did the first one, and you know, a couple days, 3 days later, went back and did another one. Then after that second interview, they offered to fly me, all expenses paid, down to New Orleans, to meet with the regional manager, Jim Jokum. And, you know, and at the conclusion of that interview, I accepted the position of being an assistant manager in training with them. I had to go through their school. They have actually a restaurant training school you have to go through and learn the ins and outs and how to manage restaurants. So I did that. The girl I was dating from the movie theater at the time, we ended up getting married. Lived down in New Orleans for 6 years, went through six Mardi Gras, had a ball. If anybody's familiar with the parishes down here, lived in Kenner, Metairie, and then I was actually promoted to a store manager of one in Kenner, moved over to Slidell, Louisiana, which is across the 26-mile bridge across Lake Pontchartrain, managed that one. I was down there for 6 years total. One reason or another, my marriage, you know, on rocks. You know, got divorced. So I moved back to Pennsylvania and got a job with McDonald's. Managed McDonald's for 4 years. So fate, once again, that little white feather from Forrest Gump. You know, a patron came in that I had known, you know, came in the mornings all the time. And he was an insurance agent. And it was telling me about how much money he made and how much he liked the insurance field and so forth. So I interviewed with that company, accepted the job. They sent me to Philadelphia, got my state insurance license, sell health insurance and accidents insurance. Did it for about a year, year and a half. I didn't like it. You know, I did well. I got a couple of awards for it, but I didn't like it. It's about too much doom and gloom. You know, what could happen to you if you don't got this insurance? And yeah, in order to sell the product, I just, that's not me. I'm more of an upbeat. Can't you tell? I'm more of an upbeat kind of guy. So I didn't like that. So went back to Mansion Restaurants, managed Bob Evans for about 4 years, two of it in Lancaster, PA, then got transferred to the general store in Breezewood, PA, managed that one for a couple years. So at this point in time, I spent 4 years active in the Marine Corps, managed movie theaters for a couple years, managed restaurants for, 6 years of Popeyes, four at McDonald's, and then another four with Bob Evans. That's, 14 years? So when I was at Bob Evans, it was right at that time where, you know, I had a hankering, wanted to start traveling again. I, you know, that same bug I had when I wanted to go and see the world. You know, here I'd been around the world 2.5 times. And by the way, I'm a shellback twice over. That's shellback is when you cross the equator. You become a shellback. You go through an initiation. You know, you're a polywog. Yeah. But you go through initiation, you know, King Neptune and so forth, and you become a shellback. It's a big deal. You get a certificate, you get a ring. You know, it's a big deal to be a shellback. But I'm a shellback twice over. I crossed the equator first time on my way to Iran, then crossed on the way back. So, but anyway, I'm a shellback twice over. Anyway, after managing restaurants for 14 years, I got that, I wanted to travel again. You know, I'm single. I want to see more of the United States. And one of these servers, waitresses, that was working for me at Breezewood, Bob Evans there in Breezewood, Her husband was a truck driver, over-the-road truck driver, and was telling me all about how he loved the freedom of the road, and there was no restrictions with regard to what he, you know, wanted to dress in that day. If he wanted to wear, you know, jeans, he could wear jeans. If he wanted to, you know, whatever. You know, if he wanted to shave today, he could shave. If he didn't want to shave, he didn't have to shave. You know, he didn't have to get up for work at a certain time, didn't have to go to bed at a certain time. All he had to do was be at point A and point B. Point A is where he picked the load up at. Point B is where he delivered the load. All he had to do was be at point A and point B, and whatever he did in between point A and point B was up to him. He got to eat where he wanted to eat, got to eat, you know, what he wanted to eat, got to dress what he wanted. If he didn't want to shave, he didn't have to shave. You know, I mean, now, you know, you want to run around like a bum with your in front of your customer and so forth. But the idea was that when you're on the road and you're, you know, 2-3 days away from where you're going to deliver it to, you can get away with not shave one day, shave the next. Anyway, so I liked the sound of that. So I worked out my notice with Bob Evans, went up going to truck driving, a company that trained me how to be a truck driver. You know, got my CDL, and I drove with them as a team driver to begin with out to California back and forth, called it Shaky. That's, anybody that don't know the nickname for California, it's Shaky. But anyway, drove from Pittsburgh out to California with a reefer unit. And, you know, we'd get out there, would load up in Butler, PA with, you know, cleaning supplies and, you know, some, you know, various products. But a lot of times, you know, and worked my way out, you know, would do 2, 3, 4 stops, 5 stops on my way out. And then on the way back, I would go to 2, 3, 4 places to load, anywhere, you know, California to Arizona, and pick up produce and bring produce back and deliver it either to Marken in Youngstown, Ohio, or to OK Grocery in Pittsburgh. Did that for a couple years, and I just got, well, first of all, started doing it as a team. Then the team guy that I was with, his name was Joe. His marriage was breaking. I'm a single guy. His marriage was breaking up. He found out his wife was working part-time at Walmart and whatnot. She was catting around. And instead of getting his sleep in the berth, every time we stop for fuel or get something to eat and it's my turn to drive, he should be in a berth, sleeper berth. He should be off duty in the berth, catching up on his rest so he could do his turn of driving. He'd be on the phone fighting with her, arguing with her, trying to check up with her. And it made me scared anymore to, you know, be in the same truck with this guy. How am I going to sleep in a sleeping berth if I'm worried that he's going to nod off at the wheel because he's not getting his rest? So I only drove with him for maybe 6 months or something. And that's when I said, hell with this. I went solo. So for the year and a half, I drove solo back and forth from California back to the Pittsburgh area. You know, like I said, cleaning supplies out, produce coming back. And got tired of, running long distance like that. So I wanted to be more of a regional driver. So I took a job with a company closer to home. Pleasant Trucking is who it was. Really good company. Really good company. Can't say enough. It was family owned. They've been bought out since by Online Transport. But Pleasant's a real good company, owned by the Morrows. You know, John Morrow Jr. and Marcy, his sister. But really good. Nancy's the mother. She was president there and she retired. Really, really, really good company. Can't say enough about them. But anyway, I ended up driving for them. Well, I drove for them for 13 years. And then I slipped and fell getting out of my truck on a Friday and snapped my quad patella tendon. Snapped my patella tendon and ripped the ACL, MCL out. So I was actually off for 2 years, workman's comp. Had to have surgery on it. Had to learn how to walk. Literally had to learn how to walk again. So I came back as a dispatcher for them. And I ended up dispatching with them for like 17 years. Very, very good company. Can't say enough about them. And health concerns. My heart started giving me problems. I was in the hospital for 11 days. And I was forced to retire. So a little bit about me, the Dirty Dog, my life's experiences. And like I said, this channel's all going to be about primarily everything dealing with the trucking industry. And stay tuned. Take care, my friends.
I can't hardly wait till I'm a trucker.